transmitting sound. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, how you doing? And welcome to the show. This week, we are focusing on your health. We're talking with renowned dietitian Carrie Ganz about superfruits and foods to enjoy during the summer months. We then speak with Dr. Veronica Tomore on how you can stay healthy and active at work, whether you sit behind a desk or are a business traveler flying all over the world. Our film critic Diana Roldan pops by to talk about 3D and Pirates of the Caribbean 4, not to mention some other cool movies. And we also have an awesome remix from Jason Derulo called Don't Wanna Go Home.
Capture your need for sound.
In this day and age, health has become a very important factor in our lives. Experts have been concentrating on informing the public about new superfruits that have been circulating in our grocery stores. But does anyone really know what they are? Here with the answers is renowned dietitian Carrie Ganz. Carrie is the author of The Small Change Diet and has been featured on programs such as Dr. Oz, Good Morning America, and a whole bunch more. She's also frequently quoted in Glamour, Shape, The New York Times, and WebMD. Carrie, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
My pleasure.
Carrie, what exactly are these superfruits?
Superfruits are those fruits that are really encouraged that individuals be consuming because supposedly they have really a very high concentration of antioxidants and vitamins and minerals that are good for our bodies.
And do you believe, you know, in the hype?
Well, I think there's too much hype when we talk about superfoods because, yes, I mean, I'm going to sit here and tell you some of these that have very high antioxidant context, but the whole thing is we just need to overall eat more fruits and vegetables.
Okay. And then with regards to these superfruits, are they just available in any sort of grocery store or do you have to sort of go out and find them?
You can find superfoods anywhere. I mean, you can even find them. You can find them at farmers markets. You can find them, yes, in your local supermarket. And they shouldn't have to send you to break the bank in order to buy them.
Okay. And are these superfruits easy to sort of integrate into, like, summer nutrition?
Very easy to integrate. And I think a lot of people don't even realize that they're using them already. So that's why, without even knowing, they're using a lot of these super-type foods.
Okay. And with regards to, you know, berries and such, I know like one of the, favorite summer foods or staples would be, you know, smoothies and all that sort of stuff. What's your take on actually, you know, freezing berries and then reusing them? Do they still have the same sort of vitamin content?
Without a doubt, it's totally recommended to freeze berries. I mean, actually, I recommend it. I mean, if you think about it, in the summer, the berries are readily available. They're lower in price because they're seasonal. So I recommend that people actually buy them and start freezing them to use later. They do not lose any nutritional status at all that way.
And what are your favorite fruits, I guess? Because I think, you know, there's varying opinions on what are the best for us.
I will always say to my patients and the media that the best fruit is the one you're going to eat first and foremost. Because I can sit here and I can tell you to eat those berries, eat strawberries, eat raspberries, eat blueberries, blackberries. But if you don't like berries, then it doesn't mean you shouldn't be eating fruit. So whatever is your personal favorite is really what you should be enjoying.
And, you know, Carrie, I think, you know, a lot of women out there, we have a lot of listeners that are women listening. And, you know, I think a lot of us either know someone or have someone in our family that has gone through breast cancer or some type of cancer. Do you believe in these fruits that are supposed to be having the antioxidants against that?
I mean, a well-balanced, healthy diet is what you want overall to help with recovering from an illness or preventing illness. And part of a well-balanced diet will include plenty of fruits and vegetables and other foods that are high in antioxidants. So it is beneficial to be consuming them.
And with regards to, I guess, vegetables, that sort of falls into that same category. Is it true that people should be eating the darker greens?
People should, and once again, I know I'm saying the same thing, they should be eating the vegetables they enjoy. So yes, first and foremost, would I recommend the darker green leafy vegetables? Sure, but if they don't like those, then they should just make sure that they're consuming some vegetable because it really is an integral part of our diets.
Joining us right now on the show is renowned dietitian and author of The Small Change Diet, Carrie Ganz. Again, check her out at www.carrieganznutrition.com. Carrie, do you have any dietary tips concerning summer nutrition?
What I think for the summer is it should be approached like any other time of year, is that you really try to eat a well-balanced diet, including plenty of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, low-fat dairy, watching your portions. directions. And the problem in the summer, though, is a lot of us end up having too much to drink, too many summer cocktails, and those we need to be careful of.
You know, something that I wanted to ask you as well, with regards to summer, and you even mentioned it earlier where, you know, fruits are in season, so it's much easier to get our hands on that type of stuff. How do you carry over, you know, eating well in the summer into the fall and winter? Because I think a lot of us then turn into people eating lots of, like, potatoes and steak.
I think what people need to remember is how great they felt during the summer, eating all those wonderful foods. They're available. Fruits and vegetables are available year-round, and there are seasonal products year-round, so we need to take advantage of that. And we can also try to remember that we could include frozen vegetables and fruit into our diets if the foods we love are not available.
And, you know, Carrie, there's a lot of people that don't necessarily like fruits and vegetables. What do you tell these people? Like, should they be doing the V8 thing?
If people don't like fruits and vegetables, I usually say to them, hey, I bet there's one you like. And I usually find out that there is. They don't need a huge variety. They need to just find one or two that they enjoy then and eat those. At least they're getting some benefit from doing that.
Now, Carrie, it says on your website, and I'm quoting here, my philosophy is simple, diets don't work. Can you explain that, please?
What I feel is that when I say diets don't work, I mean people need to change their behavior for the long haul. They don't need to focus on losing weight very quickly, because what happens when they do that, it's usually because they're restricting certain foods that they really do enjoy, and it can't last. So what I recommend is introducing small changes, making changes gradually where they develop into lifelong habits, and then you can keep off your weight for good.
And can you tell us about your book, The Small Change Diet, and the philosophy behind it?
The philosophy was really based on working with my patients in a private practice for over 10 years. And I've heard everyone's trial and tribulations of why they can't lose weight and every excuse in the book. So I developed the Small Change Diet based on all the things that my patients told me what was getting in their way. And I found 10 small changes that seem to be the key, that if everybody can adapt those, change those habits, they'll be able to keep their weight off for good. Once again, I'm interested in long-term success, not necessarily the short-term.
And with regards to the 10, you know, changes, is that overwhelming to some people, or do you take it sort of step by step?
Well, that's the whole thing. It can be very overwhelming. So I recommend it step by step. There's 10 changes, but you shouldn't do them all at once. You should choose one, go for it, let it become part of who you are, and then when that happens is only when you move on to another change.
And in the book, do you necessarily have to follow your changes in order, or you just pick and choose?
Another one of the beauties of the book. Everybody's different. Every person has things that are harder or easier for them. So in the book, I recommend choose whichever chapter actually that you think might be easier for you. Get that under your belt, then move on to another chapter in any order that you want.
And what advice do you give to someone who has tried to, you know, change their eating habits over the years, but continuously, you know, for lack of a better term, continues to fall off the wagon? How can they become successful and stay successful?
First and foremost, they need to be patient with themselves. I think that's part of the problem. I think most people set too big of too broad of an idea on themselves, too much pressure that they have to lose, you know, 5 pounds in a week, 10 pounds in a month. And a lot of times it's too much pressure and they can't keep it up. But if they allow themselves to make changes very gradually and very slowly, they'd be surprised how successful they feel and how they can keep on doing it.
And, you know, with regards to people that, again, want to keep the weight off, let's say they have become successful, is there the risk of them becoming bored with their new habits?
I like to say that food is an adventure. So you really never get bored. You keep trying new foods, and you'd be surprised that there's so many things out there that you've never tried and that you actually enjoy. That's like a lot of people who never do anything with beets or do anything with hummus or quinoa. I can go on and on. It's constantly trying new foods, and you'll find that you really are never bored.
And Carrie, you know, everyone nowadays always complains about the fact that they have no time, they have no time, they have no time. And like you said, you need to sort of experiment with food. Do you suggest then that people try to make time on the weekends and maybe freeze the food for the week so that they're not going out to the grocery store and buying like a frozen pizza?
I mean, that's always a great idea. Planning ahead is key in helping yourself to eat healthy all the time. I mean, I also do say, though, if you don't have the time to even cook, you could eat out 365 days a year and still be at your ideal body weight. It does come down to choices. It's what are you choosing? Are you choosing that frozen pizza, or are you choosing a, you know, lean burger on a whole wheat English muffin with a side of veggies? It's all about choices.
And what's your thoughts, Carrie, on, you know, I guess, I don't know if they call it the 90-10 rule where, you know, 90% of the time you're eating well and then that 10% you cheat a little. What are your thoughts on that?
I love that thought. What I always say, and I don't like to use the word cheat, I tell my patients that they do never, ever, ever have to eat perfectly because nobody does. Hey, I'm a registered dietitian. I don't eat perfectly all the time. What you want to do is make it the majority of the time. So I usually say like almost like more like 85-15 because if you're eating healthy the majority of the time, there's room for a little, you know, not so healthy every once in a while. It's okay. It's giving yourself permission that you don't have to be perfect, and that also helps with long-term weight loss.
And do you find that if people do that for themselves, that they will continue to sort of stay on the wagon, as it were? Because I feel like a lot of people think they need to deprive themselves.
You couldn't have said it better. Yes, it's that deprivation that leads to failure. When people say, hey, I'm never going to eat pasta again, I'm eliminating it from my diet. But that's crazy. They love pasta. So what they need to do is learn how to eat that pasta, eat a little less of it, add some vegetables, add maybe some beans, make it a healthy recipe, but not exclude the pasta from their diet because that they cannot keep up for the rest of their life.
And Carrie, what do you tell people? Because I know, for example, a few years ago, I sort of gave up eating dessert for the most part during the week. I let myself have some during the, you know, the weekend, but during the week I gave it up. And I remember that the first sort of 2 weeks was very difficult because like you have, you know, your main meal and then, you know, you were expecting that little something. And when I took away the little something, I was, you know, frustrated for the first couple weeks. But I think thankfully I was able to sort of knuckle down and just sort of get through it. What do you say to people who have cravings and the people who give in?
I don't think there's anything wrong with giving into a craving. It's a matter of how often and to what extent. So if somebody has a craving for chocolate every day, I'll say, all right, so have a small little miniature chocolate bar. Have something small. You don't need to sit down to a huge piece of, a huge chocolate bar, just a small little chocolate bar. It will do the trick for your craving. The other thing is people really need to look at when they're having cravings, because what I have found a lot of times it's just because they've gone too long without eating and they're really, really hungry. But if you maintain a healthy eating schedule throughout the day with regular, well-balanced snacks, you might find also that your cravings go away.
And Carrie, you know, in North America these days, it's always, you know, big size this, super size that. What do you say to people who end up having to eat out a lot and the fact that there's so much food portion out there? How do you control it if the restaurant's not doing it for you?
If the restaurant's not doing it for you, which unfortunately is a lot, there's two things you can do. One, you can share your dish. So if you're going out with somebody else, you each start with a salad and then you share an entree. Or you can, and think of it as, you know, saving money as well, you can order something and then immediately have the waiter or waitress split half your plate, because, you know, if it's in front of you, you're going to eat it. But have half the plate split, take it into the kitchen, put it in a doggy bag, you take it home, you have a meal for tomorrow.
And Carrie, how do you sort of set your kids to start off on the right foot? Because, you know, so many of us don't eat well, and then we have these kids. And as they grow up, when should they be sort of, you know, because I feel like they're little sponges. How soon do you get them eating well and understanding that they need to have the fruits and the vegetables and it's part of their, you know, regular meal plan?
Right out of the get-go, as early as possible. Parents are role models, and they have to remember that. They have to remember that these children are little sponges, and they watch their parents very closely. They might, at the beginning, hate vegetables. I did as a kid, but you know what? My parents served it to me over and over again, and now look at me. I mean, I love spinach, and I hated spinach as a kid. So what we need to do is those habits need to be taught early on, and patients and parents need to be patient, that their kids might not accept it all at once, but that's still not a reason to give in and change. They're the ones that need to set the example, and then the kids will follow.
Fantastic. Carrie, now for more, you know, sort of advice on all of these topics and stuff, where can people get, you know, a copy of your book?
They can get a copy of my book. In Canada, I know it's somewhere and I don't remember. I know it's also in Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
It's available on Amazon.com. And there is on one Canadian bookstore that it is available.
Maybe it's Chapters.
And I just don't know which one it is.
It might be Chapters.
Okay. I mean, they can also go on to my website, and then there's a link where it will bring you to lots of other places to purchase it. My website is CarrieGansNutrition.com. If they go to my book section, it will bring them to a place where they can find out how to do it online.
And Carrie, just a final question for you, I guess a final thought. What would you like to leave my listeners with as a, you know, a thought going forward with their nutrition for the summer and then again heading you know, towards fall and winter?
I think people need to remember that there's no, when we think about the winner in weight loss, the winner is not the one who loses weight the fastest, But the winner is the person who keeps their weight off the longest. So take your time, be gentle with yourself, and you will succeed.
Carrie, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. I really appreciate it.
It's been wonderful. Thank you.
That was Carrie Gans, renowned dietitian and, again, author of The Small Change Diet. Check her out, CarrieGansNutrition.com.
Capture your need for sound.
So here's the deal. I cannot say enough about Justin Timberlake each and every time he appears on Saturday Night Live. And recently he was on the season finale with none other than Lady Gaga. And, you know, he's always really good with the skits and the singing. And they actually did a big skit together. Lady Gaga, Justin Timberlake, as well as Andy Samberg. It involves singing, as per usual. And very funny. And I want you to take a listen. And eventually, if you can, head on over to YouTube and actually watch the video portion, because it is hysterical. I was laughing the whole way through. So here is Justin Timberlake, Lady Gaga, and Andy Samberg from SNL right here on The Kelly Alexander Show, singing Three Way.
Everybody's having sex.
You know, I just got a page from a girl that I met last week at the Payless.
She sucks. I also have a cutie to call who loves the way I knock on her boots.
Well, it's time to pack. Let's handle that. In 2 to 6 hours, we'll meet back and regroup. Now let's shoot.
Roll up to her crib with some Bartles and James.
Hop off the bus with the Alizé.
Now hold up, player, what you diggity doing here?
I should diggity ask you the same.
And she say,
hey, I want you more. I hope that you think that's cool.
Say word.
I know most guys won't freak together.
Well, she forgot about the golden rule. It's okay when it's in a three-way. It's not gay when it's in a three-way. With a honey in the middle, there's some leeway. The area's great in a 1-2-3-way.
Normally, I don't get down with dudes,
but tonight is a special exception.
Queen,
see, you're my best friend through thick and thin. Now it's time to make a triple connection.
Lights off, here in the dark.
Here in the dark,
it's hard to tell.
So hard to tell
where her body ends,
la, la,
and my homies begin.
Here we,
this rule dates back,
the golden rule,
to ancient Greece.
Talking about Caesar,
with two Jack Trippers and a Chris Evans.
The No Threes Company.
You guys are still here.
It's okay when it's in a three-way. It's not gay when it's in a three-way. With the honey in the middle, there's some leeway. The area's great in a 1-2-3-way.
Fellas, get ready to impress a chick. Helicopter, go helicopter.
Spend so much of our time at work that it can be quite difficult to take time out and exercise and eat right, but it doesn't have to be that way. You can take good care of yourself at work, whether you're sitting at a desk or are a frequent business traveler. To give us the proper tools to do this is Dr. Veronica Tomor, author of the book, The Lean Guide for the Business Traveler. Veronica, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you, Kelly. I appreciate being on the show.
Veronica, you know, it seems that it's, you know, very easy to just sort of hunker down in your office and work away for hours on end. What are some of the things that companies should be offering so that their employees, you know, don't become sort of overweight and unhealthy?
Yeah, and that's way too prevalent these days. And business travelers tend to focus just on work and really not on them. So there's a number of things that you can do yourself to take care of you, and your employers can do as well. One of the main things that I recommend is that you do a reality check as to where you are. And if you're putting on those pounds, really, you need to have a plan, just like you have a work plan for work. I always recommend to use the SMART approach. So be specific, measurable, actionable, realistic, and timely. Those are the 5 things that I encourage that you do, just like you do with any business plan, and that you really take a few steps to really see where you're at and also modify things if you're seeing that you're gaining weight and that you're starting to have a weight problem. And if you don't address soon, it's going to become a big problem. The other tip that I always suggest as business people is that we always carry a gadget around. We always carry either an iPhone or a BlackBerry. And it's very simple to incorporate some reminders to stay healthy. So I typically incorporate my BlackBerry. I put some reminders starting with the week Monday, and every week it's a different one. But I will remind myself to incorporate more salads, more fiber, more protein into my meals, and you'd be amazed at how these reminders, frequent reminders, do make a difference. And you avoid making them white noise by incorporating things that are different every week. And you can also put an alarm in there that's going to remind you about exercising and about the frequency of exercising. So these are small things that you can incorporate into your daily life that really do make a big difference over time and really can increase your activity and make you more conscious about your health on a daily basis.
And how important is it, Veronica, for, you know, the workplace to have some sort of gym or, you know, the option that, you know, a gym is very close by, you know, so that movement is encouraged?
Well, the gyms are, I've seen actually for a large corporation that I worked for many years, they had a gym. And it's always, typically what you see is that there's only a handful of people that are using the facilities. It seems like if you are not proactive with your health and you don't take charge, these facilities are there and they are useful, but it's really a handful of people that use them. And the reason for that is that you always have to make exercise fun. And I'm one of these people that have been exercising for many, many years. And if I don't have something fun or really that makes the activity fun, then I'm not going to use it. So I'm constantly changing the music in my iPod. I'm constantly finding new exercises. It has to be a pleasurable experience. Otherwise, you don't stick to it. And what I've seen in different sites, work sites, where they do have gyms, is if the employer doesn't provide new things or does not put new things in the workout rooms, then only a few people use them. What I do recommend it becomes more of a thing that you look forward to if you are able to do group classes in gyms that are nearby work. So I always advocate for you to put some item under your clothing, whether it be a sports bra, whether it be your shorts, whatever it might be, that's going to remind you that you're going to work out and not leave it to the end of the day when you have so many excuses not to exercise. And then the best thing to do is go from there to a gym that's close by work and do group exercises. And you'll find that that's, at least for me and many people that I've interviewed over the years, is that that really is a big motivator. If you have sessions where you're with other people, the music's exciting, you will look forward to exercising. It will be something that's fun for you and you will want to continue it.
Does it help if the company, you know, encourages their employees to be involved in community activities like, you know, Run for the Cure or the company softball team?
Yeah, see, these are examples of group activities that make it fun to stay active, and that's what I'm talking about. If there's some type of motivation, if there's some type of encouragement, as such, then it becomes something that employees want to pursue. And I think these are critical. I worked for a large diabetes company, and there was a constant involvement of the employees in doing group exercises or 5Ks and things like that that would keep the workplace motivated to engage in activities. So I think these are very key things that do motivate the employees to stay active.
Veronica, in your opinion, does the company have a responsibility to, you know, like a moral responsibility, I guess, to provide healthy food choices, you know, in the company cafeteria or snack machines? Like, I just feel like it's something socially conscious that should be going on everywhere right now.
Yes, I agree 100% with that. That is something that I believe if your cafeteria or if your the restaurant or whatever the venue might be that the workplace is providing,
that they do encourage to have healthier options. And I think that's changing. I'm seeing that a lot more often. You have, if you have better selections, you're more likely to do these, to engage in eating healthier. These are things that are very essential for employers to do, for employees to stay on track. And I think if the offerings are there, and I'm seeing that more frequently, as I mentioned, then it's much more likely for somebody to eat healthy and stay on track. And if they've been on off track, then to get back on eating healthy and an eating healthier plan. So these are essential things that I think that should be provided by employers and that I think that should be encouraged across the board.
Joining us on the show is Dr. Veronica Tomor, author of the book, The Lean Guide for the Business Traveler. Check it out, www.leantraveler.com. Veronica, you know, to me, it's not just the company, I guess, that has to make sure that you're taking care of yourself. And like you said earlier, I think it comes down to the individual to sort of be proactive. Should there be like a give and take thing going on in the company where, you know, groups of employees realize like, hey, we would like this, and then the company sort of maybe seeing if that's feasible? Because I feels like it really needs to be both sides helping each other forward.
Absolutely. And I think that it's up to the individual to take care of their health. The employer can help in the process and help with a lot of things. But I definitely think that it's really upon yourself, and it's easy to blame your circumstances, your surroundings for not taking care of your health. But ultimately, in this day and age, for example, you have options, so many options to stay healthy. Even if you eat fast foods all the time, even if you eat at McDonald's, you know, there's salads, there's so many options. I think that if you are proactive, if you are knowledgeable, and if you know how to read a label, you can incorporate this portability concept no matter where you're at. And that's really the key, is that you really have to stay on top of what you're eating, what you're feeding your body. And it doesn't matter where you're at or how hectic your life is, if you can do simple things like read, understand the labels, understand what your fat, carb, protein ratio should be, then you really can take more control over your eating. By the same token, I think if your employer and the company that you work for is really helping you and assisting you in the process by providing you better options, if they are providing more activities, then definitely you are producing that. You are helping to produce that demand if you are using the facilities, if you are consuming whatever they're offering, and you are raising that voice. And I think that's what should be happening more of, is that people should really be asking more for these things so that employers and companies across the board are providing better and healthier options. So like you said, it is a two-way conduit for better health. And I think things are changing for the better. And I think that the louder the voice, the more we will see with improvements in what companies are providing their employees with.
And, you know, something I wanted to bring up is the fact that it feels like it's a whole different ballgame, you know, if you are a frequent business traveler, because you're all over the, you know, all over the place. You're being sedentary, being on planes, trains and cars, and there's hotel rooms, hotel food, fast food. But I don't think that's an excuse for you not to take care of yourself. What are the key steps, I guess, for business travelers to make sure they're taking care of their mind and their body?
That's been my life for the past 5 years, really very fast-paced life, living a lot in airports and hotels and eating on the go, and really living out of a suitcase. And it really is extremely challenging because you have less control than a person that has a 9-to-5 job over what you're eating, the amount of exercise that you can do. Your challenges with time are huge. But there's a number of things that are strategies and tips that I recommend in the book, and I'll just mention a few. For example, it's important that you are always guarded with your eating. And one of the tips that I strongly recommend is that you never leave yourself too hungry, because if you're running from your house through security, you make it to your gate, you find that you're starving, the plane is taking off. If you have little snacks that are healthy snacks, such as protein bars, trail mix, almonds, things like that that you can put in every single bag that you have, you will be able to guard yourself and cover that hunger so you're not over hungry and make the wrong decisions. And the other thing that I also recommend is that you hydrate plenty, because our bodies signal a lot for hunger as opposed to thirst. And too often we feed our bodies with food when in reality we're dehydrated. And flying actually dehydrates you even more. So as business travelers, it's very, very important to always hydrate plenty, even more than if you had a job where you're not traveling and flying. As far as exercise goes, I think that it's really imperative that if you are a person who exercises frequently, that you continue your routine. I, for one, always pack my exercise gear first in the suitcase. You're thinking exercise already. It's not going to be something you're going to think about last. If you start putting in your clothes first, and you start putting in, start thinking, when is it that I'm going to incorporate my half an hour, you know, 3 days during the week that I'm gone, then it's much more likely to happen than if you leave it up to chance. So there's small things, essentials that will keep you on track. You just have to be very conscious about it and make it a plan to really stick with what you've been doing at home. And if you don't have any measures or plans as it is, you know, just make sure that you really have a budget for the extra calories that you consume when eating in restaurants and eating with colleagues and peers and in business meetings and conferences. Because one of the other problems that we face is that there's a lot of group dinners in fancy restaurants. There's a lot of meetings around buffets and meetings where we sit for 8 hours at a time. So there's not a lot of activity. There's a lot of eating that happens when you work for corporations. And this is a common denominator for most of the business travelers that I've interviewed.
And something I guess they would need to be careful of as well, Veronica, like you just talked about the buffets and the dinners and the sitting down, is especially, I feel like if you are an employee that's, you know, out of town in someone's city, they want to maybe not necessarily show you a good time, but make sure you're comfortable. And I think that often involves alcohol, which is obviously a problem with weight gain.
Very much so. A lot of the dinners and a lot of the de-stressors that are used in company meetings are typically alcohol. You do have unwinding time, and as opposed to encouraging exercise time, what typically happens is that there is a happy hour, there's a, you know, an after the 5 o'clock meeting gathering, and that involves alcohol. And unfortunately, because you travel, if you travel frequently and this is your norm, and you do this on a frequent basis, then it does add a significant number of calories to your diet. And if you're not burning this off, this adds to the pounds that you were accruing over time. And alcohol also is metabolized as fat, which is what's accounting for that, for those extra pounds that you wonder, you know, you might think you're not eating that much, but at the end of the day, if you're drinking and consuming a lot of alcohol, and you know, it's prevalent in the airports, it's prevalent if you're traveling on the planes and you're a frequent flyer and you're in first class, it's almost encouraged in business meetings. Alcohol is everywhere in the business traveler's life. So you need to be very conscious about how much alcohol you're ingesting, and realize that this might be adding, you know, the extra pounds that you really don't need. So be cautious with the amount of alcohol you're consuming.
And something I wanted to run by you, because it feels like with everything that you've been explaining, Veronica, that for the business traveler, people who are on the go and not in their city and all over the place, it feels like the key word is routine. Like, have a routine down and try to follow it as much as possible so that you stick to taking care of yourself.
Right. I think that the key is you really have to. You have to do that reality check and be proactive as opposed to reactive. It's you create a routine. The problem is people are in a routine usually, and they just don't stop to realize what routine they're in. If they're in that routine for the better options, then that's what you want to do. If you're in that routine for the unhealthier options, which is typically, you know, the vast majority of cases what happens, you're so engrossed in work, you're so engrossed in accountabilities and really production and doing a good job that you forget a lot about yourself. So you've gotta really do that reality check and make sure that the routine, whatever routine you're in, it is for the better, and that if you are able to incorporate healthier options into that hectic lifestyle that you have, and that you're able to really change your eating options if you're not eating healthy. And all these things can be done. It's just a matter of being a proactive consumer and taking charge of your health and making the better choices.
And Veronica, where can people get a copy of your book?
Yes, the book is available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and Exlibris.com. It's the Lean Guide for the Business Traveler, and Lean stands for Living Educated About Nutrition on the Go. So it's all about the concept of portability and smart eating on the go.
That's fantastic. Veronica, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Kelly.
That's Dr. Veronica Tomor, again, author of the book, The Lean Guide for the Business Traveler. Check it out, www.leantraveler.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
I have to tell you that I am so awful when it comes to the world of movies. There's so many going on that I don't even know what's happening, and that is why I consult the one and only film student. That's right, Diana Roldan is a film student at Concordia University in Montreal, also a good friend of mine, and the guru, the grand poobah, as it were, when it comes to movies. Diana, thanks for joining us on the show today.
No problem. It was quite the introduction.
You are just a rock star, so that's how I have to start it off. So it's been like a hot minute since you've been on the show, since the last time. And I realize that you've probably seen thousands upon thousands of movies since we've last spoken. But I guess the one I want to start off with is I want to ask you what's going on. Like, what's the hot one that we're going to talk about right off the top?
Well, I know we're gearing up for a huge summer. Kind of all the big action hero movies are coming out. The last Harry Potter's coming out. But I'm going to try to focus on maybe a movie no one's really heard of, and it's kind of small. It's thankfully playing in Montreal and a couple of places around the States, but it's not making huge tons of money because it's not getting a lot of publicity, unfortunately. So the one I'm going to talk about is called Last Night. And it has Eva Mendes from Hitch, from Once Upon a Time in Mexico, Keira Knightley from Pirates of the Caribbean, Sam Worthington, who everybody will know as the Avatar guy, and Guillaume Canet, who is the absolute dreamiest French actor, in my opinion. So that was a great one, and it's coming actually from a new director and someone who's actually a Harvard graduate. Her name is Massey Tejin, and she also wrote the film. So it's really well written, really well shot. It takes place in New York, but unlike every other movie that's been taking place in New York, it doesn't actually have the focus on the city. The city's kind of just a backdrop, which I think is a fun change. And I thought the whole thing was really interesting. It kind of explores the trust, the loyalty, aspects of marriage and what really constitutes cheating, and the characters are just great. They have a great chemistry. The dialogue, the interactions, everything just felt really genuine, and there wasn't any kind of forced moments or conversations that felt like they were just like way too staged and rang false. I really loved it.
So the movie itself though centers around what, like two couples or?
Yeah, it's one couple. So it's Sam Worthington and Keira Knightley, so Joanna and Michael, and they spend this night apart because he goes on a business trip with his business associate who he has this kind of attraction for, and that same day she runs into one of her old flames from years gone by who she still has this crazy kind of connection with. So it follows both of them as they go on, you know, through their night and through the next day, and when they meet up again, and kind of looks at all their relationships and how people feel about cheating or not or stuff like that. It's really interesting.
And a question for you, because when you mentioned off the top that the director is a Harvard grad, it's someone obviously I've never heard of before. How do you think she was able to get all these like pretty good actors in this movie?
Well, she had written a couple things before, so but really her resume is not that long of big productions. She did The Jacket. She wrote part of The Jacket that Keira Knightley was also in before. So I guess it's, you know, her relationships with people, a lot of times is how it happens. And honestly, the script is just so good that I can imagine that's what drew the people in. It's different. It's not just the same old tired kind of thing, and it's just boring and silly. I thought it was really interesting, and just I sat there and actually enjoyed the movie. I got lost in it, whereas most of the time I'm like looking for different things, and I'm actually looking for the chemistry or seeing where things are forced. And this one, I just kind of like eased into it and just watched it through and through, and it was just really great. So.
And that's saying a lot coming from you, because as you and I have discussed on the show before, you always figure out what the ending's going to be if it's predictable, and then half the time I don't even know why you went to the movie. But anyway.
Well, you know, I hope I'm wrong, but I'm usually not. So.
But this one,
I didn't know where it was going to go exactly, but it sort of ended the way I thought it would, but it got there in interesting ways.
Okay.
I like the way it got there. So
very good. And a question for you: did Keira Knightley lose her accent, or what?
No, she had it. She was British in it. Sam Worthington was still, I think he's Australian, so he still had his fun accent. And then Guillaume Canet, who's French, who I don't think could lose his accent if he tried, but I love him for it. They all had their respective accents, and they were good to go. And I think that also helped it as well. So there wasn't, because a lot of times when there's these accents, I'm always sitting there just waiting for them to trip up or waiting for them to pronounce something in a way that just rings false, and then the whole kind of illusion is shattered for me.
And
so this
like,
one, everyone was just themselves, and it was good. So.
And I feel like it's a pretty diverse cast, so that probably also lent it to being interesting.
Absolutely, and they're all so incredibly talented and it wasn't kind of who can look the most beautiful all the time and, you know, with the perfect lighting, this whole thing. It was honest and real, and it felt more genuine than a lot of things that I've seen recently. So.
And it's funny, just speaking of something recently, I have to bring this up to you. I recently saw Pirates of the Caribbean 4. I know you haven't seen it yet, which is kind of weird because you always beat me with everything. But I wanted to bring this to your attention right away. What is up with everything being 3D? Because here's the thing. I had seen Rio, the animated cartoon, maybe 2 months ago. And that was also in 3D. But it kind of warranted it to be in 3D because it was very fun with some of the characters, you know, and the special effects. It made it sort of worth it. But sitting through Pirates, except for maybe like literally three parts of three scenes, there was no reason for 3D. What is up with this obsession with 3D?
The studio answer will be that it adds a whole new dimension to the thing. For some movies, absolutely. But as you know, one of the reasons I didn't go to see Pirates of the Caribbean because it was playing in 3D. And I just absolutely hate 3D with every fiber of my being. Most movies do not need it whatsoever. Even if there's one scene, a lot of times the one scene is just useless and doesn't add anything whatsoever. So movies like, what did I see? I saw Thor recently, and you know, there was a couple little things that were okay to have in 3D. By and large, the whole movie could have been in 2D, and I would have been the happier for it. I wouldn't have, you know, been struggling with the glasses the whole time and just been distracted. Movies like Avatar, absolutely. Make it all in 3D, fantastic, but most movies don't need it. It's honestly just a big cash grab for a lot of the places, so it's just an excuse to charge higher admission prices.
Do you think they're going to cease and desist in one of these, you know, coming years, or are we stuck with this for a while?
You know, I don't know. At first, I thought it was just going to be one of those silly trends that just kind of in and out. But especially with the 3D TVs coming out and everyone seems to be getting on board, I think studios are going to keep trying. And you know, if there's the market for it, they're going to keep doing it. And that's the bottom line. So there's movies like Tangled that we saw recently that I thought the 3D, and I, going into it, thought it was going to be awful because the 3D was going to ruin it. And I really, especially there's this one scene in it that's just magnificent in 3D. So
and
sometimes it's needed, but sometimes not.
And Tangled, you said itself, that's one of our discussion topics today because that's the DVD choice I think you want to talk about.
It is, and it's so adorable. You know me, you know I love Disney, and you know I love all those kind of fun animated things. I am very picky about which animated movies I will watch, though, and Tangled, I saw it in theaters. I bought it the minute it came out on DVD, and just I love, 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 love it. Mandy Moore and Zachary Levi are in it. So Mandy Moore, we know, is a singer. Zachary Levi's in Chuck. He plays the main character. So they're in it. It's a story of Rapunzel. It has a kind of fun, modern, and definitely Disney twist to it. And it was actually executive produced by my hero, John Lasseter, who is a Pixar bigwig, and he's now Disney's chief creative officer as well. So this is a Disney movie, but you can feel the kind of Pixar influence because there's a huge attention to story. There's great characters that are fully developed. There's a really good humor that isn't kind of cheesy. It just, and everything, again, this I think are things that really ring true, and that's what kind of resonates with audiences. So on DVD, it stands up really well, but there's a typical kind of things from DVD where there's the, you know, behind the scenes stuff, which I just eat up with a spoon. But this one is kind of low on that, unfortunately. So there's this one scene with Mandy and Zachary Levi as themselves, just talking about, you know, making the movie, that just a lot of it felt kind of forced and a little too cheesy, even for a Disney movie. So that was my only kind of complaint about it. But otherwise, I've watched it a good 20 times and still will watch it again. So.
And is this a good movie for, like, how old? Like, little kids? You're a little kid at heart, I know. But, like, who's this movie for?
Yeah, honestly, it's the humor is perfectly safe for any kind of age groups. Adults will find some things humorous that maybe the kids won't quite understand. But any adult who has, you know, who's a kid at heart will find some stuff that they like in it. So
okay, now switching gears for a hot minute. I know you love the classic films, and I know you also actually really like documentaries. So where are we going with that sort of genre this week?
Actually, this week I'm gonna stick to my classics like I always do. It's a movie called Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. It's actually from 1939. It's a Frank Capra-directed film, and it tells the story of this kind of squeaky clean guy played by Jimmy Stewart, who you know is one of my heroes. And so his character is selected to replace a recently deceased U.S. senator. And, like, through the whole thing, he's stunned to receive some accusations of corruption against him. And so it's kind of the whole thing of his kind of journey through the whole political kind of machine. And it's a really interesting look, especially, you know, it's a good 80 years ago that it happened almost. And so it's really interesting to see kind of how he deals with this. And he plays his, you know, his usual earnest guy who has the best of intentions. And it's really cute to see, especially in these kind of times where everything is so political all the time. It's nice to go back and see that there's, you know, politics is nothing new. And definitely there's been films made about it, and it goes in interesting places. I thought it was really good, and it's a classic. It won the Oscar that year as well. So maybe some people have heard of it, but I know a lot of people haven't, and I think they should check it out. It's a good one.
And would that be a movie that sort of anyone could sort of sit through if they just decided to be open to it?
I think so. I mean, with any movie, you have to be kind of in that frame of mind to see it. If I'm not in a frame of mind to see a girly movie, I won't want to see it and I'll turn it off. But if I just want to sit and watch a good movie and, you know, have characters that are, you know, good and well-developed and just good dialogue, and that's, for me, a great film is when you can just lose yourself in the film and just watch it and just kind of let it wash over you and just absorb what's going on. Especially this one has, you know, a really good message, and has a Jimmy Stewart. And who doesn't love Jimmy Stewart? Just fantastic. And this is a good, I think, 7 years before It's a Wonderful Life. So it's interesting to see also the development of his kind of acting style and how he is, even though he plays, you know, similar characters in his movies. It's still nice to see, like, before It's a Wonderful Life and before that kind of whole hoopla, this movie really helped him become the big star that he became. So
okay, that's awesome. And before I let you sort of rumble out of here, is there movies that we should be looking forward to this summer? Because, you know, everyone is always getting ready for the summer blockbuster.
Well, what I find really exciting is, you know, I'm a nerd at heart as well. So I love my action hero kind of movies. And so I'm really excited to see Captain America and Harry Potter. It's the last Harry Potter. I know when the new trailers come out, I'm just so excited. So I think those are going to be good ones. And yeah, should be a really interesting summer.
And question for you, I know we briefly talked about this. Will you end up going to see Pirates or not?
I haven't decided. If I do, it'll definitely be in 2D.
Okay.
Just to, if it warrants the 3D, awesome. If it, most movies don't, though.
And I have to say, like, I saw it, so I'm not going to give it away too much, but I do want to say that it's kind of weird to not have Keira Knightley in the movie. Penelope Cruz, though, did a decent job, although, I don't know, like, maybe it's just me. Like, I was holding on a little too much, maybe, to Keira's character. But Jeffrey Rush did a great job, again, you know, in the film. And Johnny Depp.
And Orlando Bloom wasn't in it either.
Yeah, I know, and I didn't really miss him too much this time. Maybe that's not saying a good thing, but yeah, like it was definitely, you know, if you're a Johnny Depp fan, you're going to love it, especially like he has this character nailed down. Like it's just, mm-hmm. no matter what he does, it's funny and, or interesting and all that sort of good stuff. So a good movie for sure if you're a Johnny Depp fan, and I'm anxious to see that you go see it because I really want your take on it.
Well, the early reviews I was reading about it, and even when it was still in production, I was reading, you know, kind of parts of the script and stuff like that, and I just kind of went, I don't know. So I didn't really like Number 3 last time around, and so I don't know if I'll do it. But definitely, if you ask me to do it, I will definitely go and see it.
I appreciate that. All right, well, thank you, my darling. I really appreciate it, as usual.
No problem. Glad to be on.
That is our film student extraordinaire, Diana Roldan, right here in Montreal on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Bring on the...
Remix. Jason Derulo. Check that out. They playing my song. That's my song. Grab my drinks. I've been waiting. What's going on? What's going on? In this girl in my lap. Pass her now. She's a plum. The last thing on my mind is going on. Yeah.
That's Jason Derulo with Don't Want to Go Home, the extended mix on The Kelly Alexander Show. Well, a big thank you going out to my guests on the show this week, including Kerry Ganz, Dr. Veronica Tomor, and my good friend and film critic, Diana Roldan. Now, before I leave you for the week, I thought it would be awesome to leave you with your positive quote. And this is coming from a guy who a lot of people thought had passed away all because of a social media hoax, Will Smith. Well, he is alive and kicking, and here's what he's got to say. Too many people spend money they don't have to buy things they don't want to impress people they don't like. How true is that? Have a great week. You and I'll chat soon.
The Kelly Alexander Show is hosted by Kelly Alexander. Produced by Esteban Vargas, Barbara Purcell, Chris Paré, and Kelly Alexander. Original themes and production music composed by Ian Campbell. Thanks for listening.